Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people in industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And welcome once again to our program. Remind those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Great show today. We have Francina Helris of Total Protection Services. She's the CEO, the only certified security services company focused exclusively on high threat, close proximity safety and security services for the protection of our infrastructure assets in the corporate world, nuclear energy, government, personal protection. You're just going to love meeting her. And Harry Croteau is going to stop by, the Nobel laureate who comes to this program once in a while. We just love him. He's going to tell us about how he's networking all the universities around the world and with GEOSET, G-E-O-S-E-T, Google it. You'll love it. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, our fountain of useless information. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's get on to our interview. All right. Right now, I want to introduce you to a lady I've been wanting to talk to for a long time, ever since the Boston Marathon bombings. I wanted to talk to Francina Helris. She's the CEO of Total Protection Services International, and she talks about having a sixth sense for protection, how we can develop a sixth sense that helps us detect, anticipate, and plan for danger, and I want to hear all about that. So welcome to the program, Francina.
Thank you so much, Colonel. Glad to be here.
Now, this isn't really a sixth sense necessarily. This is kind of intuition. Is that right? What did you mean by that?
Well, it's the unseen. In security, we talk about the seen and the unseen. Mm-hmm. And the sixth sense is that unseen energy that is around us. And we say that in the essence of the Boston Marathon and any public event. Mm-hmm. And we have to harness that skill. We have it innately. We are born with it. We have just been desensitized to it due to our busy lifestyles. And the terrorists that are amongst us, they figure that out, that we don't pay attention. We're not aware. Oh, that's okay. Oh, it's just a kid. Really? So we need to sit at the kitchen table at the house, and we need to sit down and have a real conversation about safety and protection first. And then we need to encourage and develop those senses with our children. Because everybody at a kitchen table is an executive, a president. They hold some office in some workplace around the world, or an entrepreneur in some facet of life. But they all go home to some kitchen table somewhere at the end of the day. That's where it starts. That's where we develop that sixth sense.
Well, do people really sit around the kitchen table anymore? And if not, we just go ahead and say, well, look, this is something we're going to need to do, sit around the kitchen table and develop the sixth sense. And then where do we begin? We gather everybody around the kitchen table. You're talking about at home, I presume, or are you talking about it at the kitchen table at the office? And then where do we begin?
You define that. Everybody has to define kitchen table. Kitchen table is a term that I believe we take people from that concept to the concept of a gathering, of a collective consciousness. Mm-hmm. Coming together to identify a skill set or to raise the awareness of safety and safety consciousness around us in our daily lives. And it could be the boardroom, anywhere there's a gathering of like minds for a common cause. So I say kitchen table figuratively.
All right, well, good. Well, tell me then, supposing I gathered my family or co-workers or somebody around the table, and you happen to be there at the head of the table, how would you begin?
I would be in the office. I would begin by having a real conversation with my team members about safety and threats that they have yet to voice, they have experienced in their own world of delivering a service or producing a product for me. What are some of our vulnerabilities from the front line? Talk to me. Let's hear those. And what did you sense about that? Asking the questions and probing the mentality to think. We're just not thinking. And that's where we would start, is think through those processes, whatever they are, whether it's a vault with millions of dollars in a bank, a critical protection infrastructure such as chemical food processing plants, nuclear plants, our energy plants, our government, anything of critical or anything around people, family, loved ones, retirees, hospitals. What are those vulnerable areas? What are you experiencing, nurses and doctors on the floors? Did you sense anything? Do you sense? I think we just need to get around the table and inject the thought process into the minds of our workers, because we're so busy doing, we're just not stopping to think. Oh, that guy did come in the surgical room. We didn't know who he was, but he was dressed out. He had a tag on. Was he an infiltrator? We didn't pay attention, but we did have a problem. We lost the patient behind this. Find out. So there are certain things that we just need to have an open conversation about that has nothing to do with the Boston Marathon. It has something to do with what we're dealing with every day. That's how we start. And then from that, we codify the resources and the information, and collectively, what we've determined is when people can see themselves in the mission, vision, and they become a part of the provision. So when they see themselves and they are part of the process, part of the solution and not the problem, then you begin to really get to the culps of what security, what breaches there really are on the front line, and then the problem is solved. And you put a plan of action that everybody can participate in and be accountable for. People need something to do. They need something to think about. And when it's the honor of the war is not in Iraq now, it's right here on U.S. soil. It's right here in Buncombe County, North Carolina. It's right there in Dallas, Texas. It showed up in Boston the other day. Where's it going to show up next? Well, we need to understand the ground war is here. It's our neighbors. It's all around us. We need to be aware.
Pretty fascinating stuff, Francita, and I've got to admit, after 9/11, and we found out that they trained these terrorists to be pilots and then to fly the plane, and I'm thinking, why didn't somebody think about that? I remember myself, I play chess, and when I teach my children chess, I would turn the chessboard around every once in a while. I wouldn't let them win, but I told them that any time they were uncomfortable that we could turn the chessboard around and play the other way. Why didn't people sit down and plan for ways of hurting the United States and the ways that we are weak? And then if that would have happened, we would have seen the fact that we had great vulnerability with our airplanes, with our jetliners. And I think that's what you're trying to get at, is that we need to look at ourselves the way the enemy looks at ourselves. Is that right?
Absolutely. We need a mirror. These guys are just having a ball with us, and we need to do just that. We need to think. We need to be proactive and really think through and stop broadcasting our vulnerabilities on this media frenzy. That's where they get our secrets. We give it to them. And, you know, we need to keep our media about more of a general safety and consciousness society in general as a lifestyle, and we can do programming to that, while we quietly tuck away and put the brain smarts on dealing with structure to deal with these threats that are right here. We can't think it's overseas. It's next door. It's right around the corner from our school. So we need to consciously stop, look, and listen, and refocus our focus, because they're here. And you're exactly right. How are they thinking? They're very patient. but we have to look inside ourselves.
Yeah, you mentioned the media, but really, as long as we've had a free press, there's been complaints about the media. I remember reading about General Sherman during the Civil War. He didn't like the reporters hanging around because he said they're all spies. Well, they weren't all necessarily spies, but by when they reported the things that were going on, the troop movements and things like that, he felt that that was detrimental to their particular cause, and so he really resented the press. But we do have a free press in this country, and that's something that I don't think we're going to be able to shut down and do without. The press has been sometimes responsible and sometimes irresponsible, but I don't know if there's any way of curtailing that. You're not making a proposal that we have sort of limits on the media, are you?
Absolutely not. What we're doing is asking for a more conscious collective consciousness around the issues of the society and presenting them in a way that is practical and that makes sense and is simple enough for a child to understand. It's based out of love and not fear. And it's just programming, and it's reprogramming. And sometimes it causes one to look at its personnel and its staff and what they're bringing to the masses. Otherwise, the population will dictate the news. And certainly we don't want it to continue to shut down our cities like Boston and monopolize our media for days and days on end. My goodness, these guys are gone. They're already in the next city. What are we doing? We're still in Boston on that same street talking about it. So as a general society, we need to just kind of, you know, be a little bit more private with our vulnerabilities and then deal with them quietly and focus, and it throws the enemy off. If we're not broadcasting and so free, we are a free society, and that's why they're here. Because we can be free to do good or free to do evil. So we maximize the good in the best that we can, one person, one community at a time. And eventually, they will move themselves out and isolate themselves to a community that's just themselves, the bad community. But we have to rise up within ourselves to know who's next door, how to do that, and it's simple. It's not complicated. It's really not a complicated thing. We've got to get back to the future almost, knowing who our neighbors are. I don't know whether you've seen the movie Arlington Road or not, but someone asked me to watch that recently, and that's very relevant to the times in which we're living in today.
Well, you make a lot of sense, and I think certainly in the light of the fact that we've chosen to be a country of liberty. In other words, we can do about whatever we want to do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. And when we have liberty, we're going to have to put up with a certain amount of crime. Because liberty, you know, with liberty comes crime. And in order to protect ourselves from this, we better develop that sixth sense you're talking about. I think that's what you're saying, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the only way we're going to be. That's what they're doing. They have a sixth sense. They have a hunch. And it's been working for them. They blow up stuff. They shut us down. So we need to reverse that psychology.
Yeah, the only other choice would be to give up our personal freedoms and go back to being some sort of a totalitarian government. What's interesting is in governments, in areas that have governments where there is no crime, all the criminals are in office. And so we've chosen it to be the other way. We'll have the criminals on the street, but we don't want them in office. We don't want them tied up. We don't want the criminals to be the police department and to be the military and to be our lawmakers.
Well, you know, the criminal is as criminal does. That's it. And we can throw all those labels on it. Our government is what it is. That's all we can say about it. But what are we going to do about it? We can talk about it all day long, but we as a people, as a society, as daily people every day going in and out of somebody's workforce, somebody's home, children graduating, babies been born every day, we're in a security conscious society by the criminals. So we need to envelop that in our daily lives in some manner. Empower our children for going into the schools, when we hug our family members, when we leave a house. The CEO of the utility is going into his job. His wife is staying at home. The kids are in school. You want to ensure that these guys are empowered to protect themselves and mentally strong. You know, it's mind, body, soul, and spirit. Just your own walking weapon. And there's a place for guns, absolutely, but it's an education, and it's a re-education around guns and violence and how we win over top of that. Yes, of course, life is good and bad. We have to always prepare to deal with evil, but that's the key, is preparation.
Yeah, I noticed that you're willing to wade into that question on the NRA, their stance that increased gun ownership is the key to securing neighborhoods and schools. Would you, you know, since you brought up the subject of guns, would you be willing expand on that for us a little bit? How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, as I said, you made the statement there, guns are the sum of the part, which equals the whole. They're one part of the solution. It's not the single bullet. It is a sum of the parts. So you can take that for however you want to take it. But there's a holistic approach to the securing our mindsets. That's first of all what we have to do is think. We have to just stop and just think for a minute. And that we may have to hang out in that space for a minute. And think about that gun and that bullet. What are we protecting? What are our real assets and who are our real people? Who are our loved ones? Do we really have to have a gun to protect somebody from overseas? Or is it our next door neighbor? Does it require this? And is it a hunting gun? Are we a recreational family? If so, we educate our family on how to use guns and the proper use of it. I'm a gun owner. I am in a protection business. And we ensure that our employees are qualified on those weapons. I take the weapons and bullets very serious when I hit the range, and I qualify and I test. So I have a great appreciation for guns. But we must educate and redefine what that means to our greater society. So it's not based out of fear. It's based out of an appropriate, practical use.
Well, if somebody's going to commit a crime with a gun, of course, the logical thing is, and it has been done over and over and over and over and over again, go to places where people are not protected. The NRA says, look, we need guns in schools. The killers that we've seen recently have chosen schools and young children specifically because they can't defend themselves. It almost seems crazy when we are crying over our children and yet calling for more gun control. So the only ones that will have the guns that will be the criminals. You know, I'm from Texas, and here in Texas, we believe that God created men, but Sam Colt made him equal, and so that's the way we see the gun situation.
Well, you know. And that's a freedom of expression and thought, but I believe there's a lot of momentum going politically to boost all of that emotion. But when we peel back the onion and break it down around that kitchen table, then we begin to really evaluate. And I think that's where we need to go. We need to just think for ourselves and not for what the media is telling us. At our space, in our place, how does a gun become relevant? And then if it is, then you educate around that and be smart about it, you know, and then that's what it is. And the cops, you know, and families and women now are going out to get more guns because that's the traditional route. And if you know, at least they're being educated. But I think once the other parts of the whole come together, when there's a holistic approach to this warfare that we have on our U.S. turf now, that we'll begin to see we're not able to always have access to the hardware. So we've got to rely on our internal programming, our internal GPS to guide us through terrains and terra that may not involve weapons.
Yeah, I was in London a few years ago, and there was a murder
committed in I think is in Westminster, and the first responders got about two blocks away from where this was going to happen. I'm talking about the ambulance people, and I'm talking about the first responders. They weren't armed, so they weren't allowed to go in. And a member of parliament who happened to be in the area where the shooting took place had to walk up two blocks to inform the first responders that the gunman had left the area and they could go in and rescue the poor victim. And by the time, of course, they got there, the victim had died. I was appalled, of course, being from Texas and being from America, where we do have guns. To me, that was absolutely the most insane thing I ever heard of in my life. But that's life in Britain where guns are outlawed.
Well, you know, again, it goes back to that planning phase. And there's an appropriate place for guns. And it depends on the mindset of the leadership. Parliament, you know, whether it's the tribe, the king, the Arabs of the Middle East, in London. It's everywhere. Their mindset's a little different when it comes to ours regarding guns and etiquette. So again, it goes back to that planning process. A lot of these guys that we see on the table and we're talking about right now are byproducts of the intellectual property behind the planning. The generals and the colonels, these are the executors out here that we see every day helping us to be safe, our cops, our law enforcement. The strategic planning comes from the minds behind the table. How are we going to protect Parliament? Or we're going to not use weapons in this case. And I have cases right now where clients are, should I use a weapon to protect this area? It's not that it's a bad, a process, but it's located in a bad area. And we believe we need guns. Well, we have to evaluate that. There's an evaluation process. Is there any other option to deal with this assessed problem besides displaying a weapon? There are a lot of unseen tactics that can be used. You'll never see a weapon, but it's always there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a strategy, a mental strategy of a shift that we need to make around guns, where it's not based out of fear, it's based out of sound mind and power of protection. United we stand, divided we fall. There's a group of guys that know how to handle guns. And we want those to be in the hands of the experts. And if you have one, you know how to use it. That's it. That's all we're saying. And then look at the other options, the sixth sense, even behind that weapon. We're on the range. We're training. I'm observing. People coming in to take that weapon, you'd be surprised at the mentalities that are exhibited in the classroom. And dry fire. And when you get out to that range with live bullets, the mindset that you watch on that range is incredible, to see the force, you know, that someone puts behind that pulling that trigger. You can gauge a lot about how someone is going to react in a real life situation on that range. And so I believe there's a place for it, and again, it's sixth sense. Even there, you got to know when to pull that gun in a situation, and sometimes your senses would just tell you to shoot. And sometimes it will say no. So those things have to be developed before you even bring on the toys, the guns and the bats and all kinds of other stuff that's out there.
Well, Francina, you make so much sense. And, Francina, it's so refreshing to hear someone talk sense about firearms. I mean, we know that gun violence has actually gone down in recent years since gun ownership has, and use has been liberalized by honest citizens. And in countries where guns are outlawed, crime runs rampant, like in London and in Mexico and other places. Anyway, I want to talk more with you about this in the second half hour, so stick around. And we'll be right back.
Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Arthur M. Schlesinger Jr. In the end, capitalism defeated the apocalyptic Marxist prophecy because of the long campaign mounted by liberals to reduce the suffering thereby the rebel passions of those to whom accidents of birth denied an equal chance of life.